Hello and welcome to An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. We explore the Book of Mormon with the assumption that science worked the same then as it does now and that the characters are real people with the same types of feelings and tendencies as you and me today. The views and opinions expressed here are strictly those of the narrator and should not be considered official interpretations in any way. And now An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. Hello and welcome back. Today we will be finishing the last four chapters of the Book of Alma, covering chapters 60 through 63. But before we start, we'll ask a trivia question that we'll answer at the end of today's video. How old was Captain Moroni when he died? He was 25 years old when he became leader of the Nephite army. How old was he when he died? I've said before that Mormon, who was writing the plates and who wrote the Book of Mormon, was a huge fan of Captain Moroni, and we see that at play here in Alma chapter 60. Alma chapter 60 is a letter that Moroni wrote to Pahoran, the chief judge, and the entire letter is Moroni angrily chastising and threatening Pahoran. The Book of Mormon covers nearly 1,000 years of Nephite history, and Mormon frequently says that he doesn't have space to write even the 100th part of the information available to him, but even so, he included Captain Moroni's letter of rebuke to Pahoran in its entirety. And that's just one example of where Mormon chose to include all of Captain Moroni's words. In Alma 44, he quoted Moroni's words to Zerahemna on the banks of the River Sidon. In Alma 46, he included his words to his men as they gathered around the title of liberty. In Alma 54, Moroni wrote a threatening letter to Amaron, the king of the Lamanites, and Mormon included both Moroni's letter to Amaron and Amaron's response, both of which were unedited. Then in Alma 48, Mormon took several verses to praise Moroni and discuss his attributes, stating in conclusion that if all men had been, and were, and ever would be like unto Moroni, behold, the very powers of hell would have been shaken forever. Yea, the devil would never have power over the hearts of the children of men. And it seems no coincidence that Moroni is the name that Mormon gave to his own son. The other fascinating thing to me about Mormon's decision to include Moroni's letter in chapter 60 is that Moroni's letter, which is full of threats and angry words directed at Pahoran, was based on a lack of information. Moroni misunderstood Pahoran's situation, and he attributed the lack of support he was receiving from Pahoran to laziness and malice. Moroni rebuked him for failure to send food and support, and he threatened to go to Zarahemla and take the supplies he needed by force if he needed to. He criticized Pahoran for neglecting his people, but as we'll learn in the next chapter, political insurgents had taken over the Nephite government and removed Pahoran from office, and he had been forced to flee to the land of Gideon. But even though Moroni's message was based on a lack of information, Mormon included it, and it's now part of the scriptures. For me, Mormon's inclusion of Moroni's letter indicates a couple of things. First, it's okay to be wrong about something. Having a mistaken understanding or drawing a wrong conclusion based on incomplete information is not a sin. It's certainly the case in the world of engineering. You work with the information that you have, and then you revise as needed when new information arrives. That's really the best you can do. Another thing that we learned from Moroni's conversation with Pahoran is how infrequently the Nephites corresponded with each other. Moroni was not far from Zarahemla, the capital. Once he and Pahoran started corresponding, they were able to send several letters and even mobilize troops in just a matter of months. We saw another example of infrequent communication in the previous chapter. Moroni was surprised to learn that the city of Nephiha had not received reinforcements or provisions from the government. Moroni was located close enough to the city of Nephiha that when it was invaded, its people fled to his camp. How did Moroni not know that they hadn't received reinforcements? How did he not know that the country's government had been overthrown? we really take modern communication for granted. But coming back to chapter 60, in his letter, Moroni overflowed with anger and frustration for the lack of support that the military had received. He threatened Pahoran, saying that if he did not send assistance, that Moroni would bring violence to the capital. He would march into Zarahemla with his army and take what they needed by force. He closed his epistle saying, "Behold, I am Moroni, your chief captain. I seek not for power, but to pull it down. I seek not for the honor of the world, but for the glory of my God and the freedom and welfare of my country, and thus I close mine epistle." In the next chapter, Alma 61, Pahoran responded to Moroni's letter. He was not, as Moroni had suggested, sitting idly on his throne, ignoring the affairs of his kingdom. In fact, he was no longer on his throne at all. An insurrection had removed him as the chief judge and replaced him with the king. And this new king named Pacus had formed an alliance with the Lamanites in which he offered to maintain the city of Zarahemla until the Lamanites had conquered the Nephites, and then Pacus would officially become the king of the Nephites. Pahoran had been forced to flee from Zarahemla to the land of Gideon, and that's where he was writing the letter. He'd been gathering an army so that he could return to Zarahemla and attempt to retake his place on the judgment seat. He wasn't angry with Moroni for having scolded him and threatened him with violence, because before receiving Moroni's letter, Pahoran didn't know whether bloodshed would be justified in restoring the government. But Moroni's letter had removed any question about this. So Pahoran thanked Moroni for his letter and asked him to actually make good on his threat to bring violence to the capital. If Moroni's army stopped at Gideon along the way, he could join forces with Pahoran, and then they could go to Zarahemla and restore the government together. So then we move to Alma 62. Moroni was relieved to learn that Pahoran was still an ally. So he did what Pahoran requested. He left most of his army on the coast of the East Sea, and he marched toward Gideon with a small number of men. He marched through towns and villages along his way, and he flew his standard of liberty to recruit men into his army. Thousands took up their swords and joined him. When he reached the city of Gideon with his army of new recruits, he joined with Pahoran's army, and together they marched on Zarahemla. With their combined army, they outnumber Pacus's army of insurgents. So the battle was quick, and it was lopsided. Pacus was slain, and his men were taken prisoner. They held trials for the insurgents, and many of them were, quote, executed according to the law. Mormon summarized the situation by saying, "Whosoever would not take up arms in the defense of their country, but would fight against it, were put to death." After they retook the capital, Moroni immediately sent food and 6,000 men to help Helaman defend the western part of the land. He sent another 6,000 men and also provisions to Lehi and to Teancum. He left, it says, a large body of men in Zarahemla to defend the capital, and then he and Pahoran marched toward the city of Nephihah with their army. Along their way, as they traveled toward Nephihah, they encountered a Lamanite army. They killed several, and they took their provisions and weapons. They were marching on Nephihah, and Moroni didn't want to break his momentum and have to deal with transporting prisoners. So he offered the Lamanites a deal. He would let them live if they would covenant to never attack the Nephites again. Verse 17, "And when they had entered into this covenant, they sent them to dwell with the people of Ammon, and they were in number about 4,000 who had not been slain." When Moroni's army arrived at the fortified city of Nephihah, the Lamanites saw how big the army was, and they stayed inside and refused to come out to battle. When night came, Moroni climbed one of the walls to see where the Lamanites were located, and he saw that the Lamanite troops were sleeping by the entrance, which was on the east side of the city. So he told his men to climb the west wall using ladders and cords and to descend silently on the opposite side from the entrance. So when the morning came and the Lamanites woke up, the Nephite army was inside the city walls. Moroni's army slew many and took others prisoner. However, many escaped and fled east toward the land of Moroni. Moroni made all the prisoners the same offer that he had made the last army that they had captured. They could go and live with the people of Ammon as free people if they wanted, and all of them accepted. Verse 26, thus had Moroni and Pahoran obtained the possession of the city of Nephihah without the loss of one soul. And there were many of the Lamanites who were slain. Moroni and Pahoran then marched north to the city of Lehi. When the Lamanites saw the army approaching, they fled. And Moroni's army pushed them southward from one city to the next until they finally reached the land of Moroni, the last city on the nation's southern border. All the remaining Lamanite forces were concentrated and gathered there, including Amoron, their king. Moroni's men surrounded the Lamanite army from a distance, and then the sun set. Most of the Nephite and Lamanite soldiers were too tired to do anything other than go to sleep, but not Teancum. This recent war had lasted nearly 7 years. It had cost tens of thousands of lives. It had also caused a famine. And so while the others slept, Teancum left the army and crept into the Lamanite camp. He went forth with a cord from place to place. I'm not sure what the cord was for. Maybe it was to help him find his way back. He was searching for Amoron, and at last he found him. Amoron must have been sleeping near his men, because Teancum threw a javelin at him, struck him near the heart, but unlike his brother Amalickiah, who had also been killed by Teancum, Amoron did not die instantly. Before he died, he was able to wake up his men, and they were able to catch and kill Teancum. The next morning, Moroni, Lehi, and the Nephites attacked the Lamanites. They slew many and succeeded in driving them all the way out of their lands. At last, the war was over, and against all odds, and despite being badly outnumbered, the Nephites had won. Even with the Lamanites defeated and gone, Moroni still did not stop until he had made the cities along the southern border strong enough to not be vulnerable. Then he appointed his son to be the next military leader, and then he retired and went home. Moroni was only 38 to 40 years old at the time that he retired, and so his son, Moroniha, must have been a very young general. Pahoran returned to his judgment seat, and Helaman resumed his ministry. Because of the length of the war, both the church and the government had fallen into a state of disarray, and new regulations and restructuring were needed. Verse 45, therefore Helaman and his brethren went forth and did declare the word of God with much power unto the convincing of many people of their wickedness, which did cause them to repent of their sins and to be baptized unto the Lord their God. And it came to pass that they did establish again the church of God throughout all the land. New judges and chief judges were chosen to govern the people, and prosperity returned. But despite their prosperity, the people remained humble and did not forget the Lord. They remembered that he had supported and delivered them, and they prayed continually. And then Helaman, the son of Alma, died. Shiblon was the name of Helaman's younger brother, and he was also his successor. He took possession of the sacred items given to Helaman in Alma 45, the Liahona, the various plates, etc. He walked, it says, uprightly before God, and he did good continuously. In the 37th year, a large group, consisting of 5,400 men, along with their wives and children, left Zarahemla and entered the land northward where the Jaredites had once lived. Then more people went north. Chapter 63 talks about Haggoth, quote, an exceedingly curious man. He was a shipbuilder. He built a very large ship, which he launched northward into the West Sea. The following year, he built several more ships. Many people boarded these ships with their families and provisions, and they launched northward, never to be seen again. Some people have speculated that Haggoth's people reached and populated the Polynesian islands, but, and this is just my opinion, that seems highly unlikely to me. There would not have been enough time or provisions for a ship to cross the Pacific Ocean, land on the Polynesian islands, and then return to the Americas all in a single year. There's a lot of other reasons too, but maybe we'll leave those for another time. Shiblon, who was now the church's leader, was growing old. Before he died, he passed the records, the Liahona, etc., to Helaman, his nephew. He also caused that the contents of the plates should, quote, be written and sent forth among the children of men throughout all the land. except for a few things which were prohibited. We don't have any way of knowing exactly what information went forth. However, Shiblon's actions indicate that the Nephites probably had a decently high literacy rate and were able to read the scriptures. In the 39th year, Moroniha, the son of Captain Moroni, withstood a Lamanite invasion provoked by Nephite dissenters. His army badly defeated the Lamanites and they retreated back into their own lands. And that's how the book of Alma ends. And now we'll end by answering our trivia question. How old was Captain Moroni when he died? Alma 63:3 tells us, "And it came to pass that Moroni died also, and thus ended the 36th year of the reign of the judges." He died in the 36th year, about 5 years after he retired, which would mean that he was only 43 to 45 years old when he died. The reason for the ambiguity and the lack of precision is because although we know that he became general at age 25, we don't know whether he became the general the same year that the Lamanites and Zoramites first invaded, or if he was already general for a year or two before that. Either way, though, we should probably have an episode dedicated to Captain Moroni. That's all we have today. If you're still watching, click subscribe or give a thumbs up or leave a comment, and we will see you next time.